Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Can I wear glasses during this thing?
Oh my God.
You're getting really Hollywood.
I can't with you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mark and Heidi podcast. We are the Other D'Amelios.
Hello, I'm Heidi.
And I'm Mark.
Let's talk about, this is our weekly date. We have to just kind of touch base on that a little bit. If you've listened to any other podcasts, you know that there's been times, a time that I dressed up and Mark didn't, and then another time where we both just were super comfy. Today, I feel like I'm a put together jeans, a little shoe boot with a heel,
so nice.
And a white button down. Mark also has on a white button down. From the waist down, he gave up, and he's got sweatpants and Vans. But you look great.
These are high quality tapered yoga pants. These aren't slacks or sweatpants.
You saw that I was wearing a white button down, and then you also decided to wear a white button down.
I already had it in my half of my shirts are white button downs.
That's true. But you look great, and I'm so happy to be here with you on our podcast date.
Cool.
Want to talk about what happened over the weekend?
Yeah.
It was a fun weekend. It was hot outside. It was so nice.
Yeah, it's nice that LA is starting to open up and restaurants are open and a lot of people are out and about. Dixie is doing YouTube, and she has a team that works with her that Tommy and a few other people on her team decided to kind of make things cool instead of having a typical meeting at our house. Or we decided to go out to dinner to Nobu in LA and have our meeting there, which was a lot of fun. And
it felt a lot less like work, especially for a teenager, I'm sure. I mean, it felt less like work for me. I'm sure it felt like that for her, which was nice.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we've tried to instill in not only the girls, but our team, like just to try to make work fun and be professional and take it seriously. But when you can, make it less like work. And we got a lot accomplished. We had a great dinner, and I think she was into it. And her team was into it.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a goal for all of us and our team for the years to have. If it's not fun, then what's the point? Let's just try to make every experience a lot more fun. Not that we weren't having fun before, but I think when you make a conscious effort to do anything, it shows. And so it was a fun night. It was nice to like talk with the team and in like a different setting and not like work mode.
Yeah, I think because we don't have an outside office yet for obvious reasons. We haven't done it because of COVID. So we have a couple of people come to our house every day, and that probably adds a little bit of extra pressure on people. Not only they're not only coming to work, they're coming to work at someone's house. So it's nice to get everybody out in a social setting.
Yeah,
and
that was fun.
See everyone cut loose a little bit and relax. It was cool. So.
And a little something happened when we left the restaurant. Paparazzi was waiting for us, and they asked me to speak on something that happened that was online, and I did. I think I do a really good job of not clapping back like I used to when all this first started, trying to, like, people think they know things, and I'm trying to speak up for my kids or my family, and I've learned it's just not worth it to give it the attention. But I was asked about a specific prank video, and I said what was on my mind, and I just in the moment, it was hard. Like, the prank was, I don't know that the prank was for her, but she definitely got dinged in the midst of it, and she was really bummed out about it. And as her mom, I wanted to say that it wasn't cool, and she was hurt by it. And there was a lot of people that were like, as a mom should, you know, but a lot of people were like, she needs to sit down and she's soft. And I don't do that stuff normally. I don't usually respond to things like that, but I couldn't help it in the moment.
Look, I will do anything to protect the girls, and I try not to get involved. And I think it comes from my childhood that my mom worked a lot and I had to kind of figure things out for myself. And I think it was very beneficial for my upbringing. And Dixie would often say, oh, everyone's intimidated by you. But I never gave anybody reason to be intimidated. But I only get involved in stuff when, you know, someone puts a finger on either the girl, we're going to have a serious issue. But I kind of let the girls figure out how to deal through these life situations. That's the first thing. Second of all, I was a silly 19-year-old college kid who was broke and had very little notoriety except on campus, and I was probably an asshole. I could not imagine being in these kids' situations where they have this incredible notoriety, tons of money, and I can't think of one time that any one of these kids has ever been not respectful towards us. And it's a tough balance, right? Part of me wants to sit there and stand up for my daughters, and part of me understands what's going on and the game that's being played and what's happening, coupled with the fact you have a bunch of early 20s, late teenage kids that are out there dealing with fame and notoriety and all this stuff. And I think it's better to give them a pass. And I don't think anyone's done anything that crosses the line where I have to pull the dad card.
Well, like, we both have our POV on it that are different. And I think this kid's going to continue to do what he does. And me speaking up on it isn't going to change that. And that's fine. The way I look at it is I want my girls to know that if I'm asked about it, that I have their back, especially she was bummed out about it. And if I'm asked about it, I'm going to speak about it truthfully, but I'm not hung up on it. This isn't a topic of our life right now. It's just, I was asked, I answered in the moment, and literally keeping it moving. But I mean, if there's a thought as these kids grow, like, well, you know, maybe that wasn't cool. And I don't know. Maybe he will never think that, and that's fine, but I don't really know him, and that's it. But I will say, I think I've, over the years, you know, you're kind of like, I don't get involved in stuff, and you're right, and I've learned, because I used to get more involved with the kids and their friendships and stuff, and I don't do that anymore, and I've made a conscious effort to not do that anymore, because you're right. It is their life to figure out the ups and downs and relationships and friendships and all of that, and I don't want to overstep. You know, it's harder when the whole internet has an opinion on it, but I've learned it's better for them to let themselves figure it out and not get involved. Moving right along.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
We did something else fun this weekend. So, wait, when did this whole thing start?
Well, we used to watch Entourage.
When it was in real time.
Yeah, it's going back.
15 years?
14, 15 years, and we watched it. And
Charlie was like one or two?
Right.
Oh, my God.
And I had been out to L.A. a lot, but we loved the show. And so we started being...
Because they were New Yorkers, and we're like, you know, in that area. And so to see New Yorkers living in California was so interesting.
So we started binge watching it over the weekend. And it's kind of funny because the president of our D'Amelio family company now is Greg, who is definitely Ari Goldish in a way. He was an agent. He came over from UTA to work with us, and in some ways, just not in
the
other ways.
In all the good ways.
In all the good ways.
He's like protects the family, like always looking to secure that deal, but like he doesn't scream. He literally never raises his voice.
Right.
He doesn't throw anything. He's not rude.
Right.
But he's definitely, he hustles.
But what's cool about it is, so we got to see the show over a decade ago, and we weren't living here. So now we're living here. And even when the show started, the previews and just there's so much there that we're like, oh my God, we live right near that. Or we've been to that place. And it's kind of funny that as we're progressing, I think we're on season four. Now. And we'll be through that by tonight.
But it's, for people who don't know, it's these four, what are they, in their 20s, early 20s? One of them is an actor. And so they moved to LA, and he's got this agent who's a wild, he's rogue. And, it shows like the challenges of now having fame and notoriety and people coming up to them and all of that, which is that piece of it, I guess, is, I mean, we have daughters, so it's a little bit different, but, and we're here as a family, but it's, you know, similar to a little bit of what the girls are experiencing. So it's interesting that side of it, but there was no social media in it, which is a whole nother thing. And I keep like forgetting, like, why aren't they posting when I'm watching it? Like they're going to wherever. Why are they posting? So, but it's so fun to watch now that we live here for sure.
And then we also noticed that, so I had a clothing brand called Mad Soul, and I forgot all about it, that Turtle wore Mad Soul, and I don't even remember that. And all of a sudden I was watching it and I was like, oh my God, he's wearing Mad Soul again.
Which that was so cool.
And that was such a big thing. Like back then there wasn't, when I had my own clothing brand, there wasn't social media to the extent there is now. There were some videos. I think we had a video of Jay-Z wearing some stuff, and that was a big deal. But there really wasn't any way except to post it on your own website for anyone else to know that. So
yeah.
it was really pretty cool.
And to get your stuff into the hands of the people, you know, if you're a small company like trying to grow, I feel like it's a lot easier now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had to run, jump through hoops.
You had to like to advertise, put an ad in a magazine, which is super expensive.
Yeah.
Right?
And you had to compete with, there wasn't really, there was some, a little bit guerrilla marketing type things, but for the most part, it was, you had to play by the rules. Mm. And if you wanted to be a certain kind of clothing company, you had to advertise in GQ. If you wanted to be like a streetwear company, you had to advertise in XXL or.
Do you remember Yellow Rat Bastard?
Yeah. That was a store downtown in New York City. That was one of the first stores
but
I got Mad
Soul into. Don't they have a magazine too?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember that. Well, I think that's why you have so much appreciation for how to work social media, because being an entrepreneur your whole life, like you live that trying to grow a business with no social media. And that's, you know, obviously you didn't know because it wasn't there, but you got into it really quickly when you realized, like, wait a minute, hold on, this is a game changer. And you did great with it.
I always tried to work smarter, not harder. And I remember when people used to handwrite orders and mail them, I was early on a fax machine. When people started to fax, I was early on email. And then I've always tried to stay a step ahead.
Did you have AOL?
I did have AOL.
That was your email address?
It was madsales@AOL.com. Aww. M-A-D-Sales.
Wait, do you remember? Didn't you have a Palm Pilot?
Yeah.
You had all, anything new that came out where you were like, let's go get this.
And I remember having the Palm Pilot, which had all your contacts, but you couldn't make a phone call off of it. So you'd
right.
have to carry your phone, a Palm Pilot, and then you'd have to look up a number, like a little black book, and I'm like,
in the phone book, probably.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Steve Jobs was having the same problem. He was like, I have an idea. Let's bring them all together in this nifty...
In his iPhone.
Yeah. So wait, what was your first cell phone?
My first cell
phone. Mobile phone.
Yeah, my first... I remember I was really early, like early 90s, like right out of college. I didn't have one of those ones that looked like it had a huge battery pack that you had.
With
like
the
you
antenna.
Were in, like in... on the battlefield in World War II kind of phone. I didn't have that one that you needed two hands to hold it. But I had one that was probably like a walkie-talkie size, but the antenna wouldn't go down. So I had this like 8-inch antenna that would stick out of my pocket. And I remember I was in a business meeting and someone called my phone and everybody was like startled. Like the first time cavemen saw fire, they're like, what? What's ringing in your pocket?
I was like, did you answer it?
I was like, hello.
You're like the coolest in the room.
And meanwhile,
this giant antenna.
The antenna touched the ceiling.
My first phone, I remember, it was a flip phone. I think it was red and silver. Oh, so I moved to New York City when I was 25 and I didn't have a cell phone. I had a beeper, but I couldn't take it because... it was like local. Why did I? So like.
Why did you have a beeper?
It sounds so shady. I had a beeper. Well, I was modeling and I was like, I would go to New Orleans a lot. And so like if my mom needed me or my dad, how else are they going to get in touch with me? We're on location. We're on sets. Like there's no like house phone. Like, I don't know. And so that was the reason for the beeper. It was nothing weird. Trust me. And then I moved to New York City and didn't bring the beeper. And then. So I just had my roommates and I had a phone in our apartment. That was the only way I could get in touch with me. And then I got a...
So wait, you were the only person using a beeper for legal activities. 99.9% of the world used a beeper for illegal activities.
You know what? I disagree with that. No. You know what? When you have daughters and they're in their 20s and they're working and they're going out, like you need to be able to contact them.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
God forbid. But yeah, so I had a beeper. Wow. I had a beeper. That's like, sounds so weird.
I would notice you'd stand out on the street with your, Shelby's checking your beeper and now it's all coming together.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I think we kind of talked about this a little bit, but what are some of the biggest challenges you've faced as a parent?
I mean, I feel like there was some in every sort of phase. You know what I mean? Like you have newborn phase, you have like all these toddler phase, like all these phases. Do you want to talk about teens?
No, I think it gets back to what we were talking about earlier. My biggest challenge is giving advice and parenting, but not being overbearing that they don't learn the lessons for themselves. Because I think if you just do everything and you look, we're so, from the time they're born, you're checking them to make sure they're breathing. You're watching them as they're walking to make sure they don't fall and crack their head open. We're all, as parents, and then as they're getting into social situations, you're trying to guide them. And I think the balance, which is tough, is I think if you overparent and you don't let them make mistakes, it hurts them more in the long run. And I firmly believe that. And I think you always run into situations where, like, you know, my mom never told me, don't put flammable liquids on your model cars and light them on fire in my bedroom.
But you did it anyway.
But I did that, and I learned a lesson that the whole room could catch on fire, and you'd have to douse it out with a bowl of water that you scrambled around while your mom was at work. And then you had to take the carpet and lift the whole bed up, take the carpet, move it around so the burn stain would never be found. And never did it again after that. But
so you learned the lesson.
But I risked burning my entire house down. And there was countless episodes of things I did like that.
Okay, so let's say our kids did that. How would you react? Like, first of all, did your mom find out?
No.
How would you react if the exact same thing happened and let's say a year later you found out? Like, you found the burn mark under the rug.
I would probably roll my eyes like I do and say, you know, you could have burned the whole house down. Well, you could have injured other people, blah, 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 and done all that. But with that, I never did it again.
Yeah. Something that is challenging for me, especially when they were younger, I don't know. I think I was pretty tough on the girls in a lot of ways of like they had to do chores, they had to, you know, be a part of the family and contribute, and all of those things were really important to me. And then just normal like life lesson type things, but this is something that I always struggled with. We had this conversation, I think, before we had kids, of I didn't want them to do the right thing. And this is something I learned from you, right? I didn't want them to do the right thing because they were scared of us. We wanted them to do the right thing because it was the right thing to do. So how do you teach them that? And I think that was hard for me because I just wanted to say, like, no, don't do that, because I said so. And I think there's a lot, more that goes into it. And it's hard because there's a lot going on. There's school, there's work, there's, you know, life happening. And it's hard to take those moments every time and sit down and let me tell you why and blah, blah, blah. And I think what happened was it happened over time. And it wasn't like a lot of little things added up to that's kind of was what we were trying to accomplish. And, you know, I know they don't want to, like, they have this thing, they don't want to disappoint us, but I think something we instilled in them is like, no matter what it is, like, we're still going to love you. We're still going to support you and help you figure out, like, okay, how do you not do that again? Like, what were you thinking? Why would you do that? And like, Let's not do that again or whatever. So that's probably been the biggest challenge for me, is taking the time to, you know, do that. So
I think people would be surprised that the girls were taught to have, to be well-mannered, to be respectful. And it wasn't something we had to drive home to them all the time. They would say, yeah. Not to me as much. I didn't want them to say yes, sir, to me, actually. But they would say, instead of saying what or huh,
or yes, say, please, or yes, ma'am.
And I think we showed them, we led by example. I don't know where I got it from, but I always held the door open for people and little things that were my pet peeves of like people that litter and mm-hmm. and aren't respectful of others. It's just something that I don't really know where I picked it up. Maybe a little bit from my mom and dad, probably, but
people have their perceptions of what the girls are like, I can only go by, like, I know that they're respectful. And there's been a couple times that, like I'm not maybe a month ago, Charlie said something and I turned around and looked at her because I was like, wow, she's never spoken to me like that. It was so, like, harsh. And she was like, I was talking to the dog. I would never speak to you that way. And I was like, I was just a little bit in shock. I don't know. I think being raised in the South, like, it's, you know, just be respectful to each other. It's not just her being respectful to me, just people just being respectful in general. And so anytime they work, or whether it's, you know, on a photo shoot or video, anything, or even like these Zoom meetings that they're having with like CEOs of companies, they always go back to their agent and say, they are the most respectful, like, girls. They are not trying to talk over anybody, not trying to be know-it-alls, like, just respectful of all the people in the room. And they're like really nice girls.
Right.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
I think we've done a good job, not only with what's happened over the last 18 months with the girls and all the notoriety and everything, but overall, I know that we have a very good marriage, and I think we've done a good job balancing all the pitfalls and stumbling blocks of that make marriage sometimes tough. How do you think we've done that? And do you think we have a good marriage?
I think we have a really good marriage, from my point of view, because in our marriage, I feel happy and fulfilled, with you as my partner. But, you know, over the years, like, I think we always had fun. There's moments that do you get frustrated with each other, or you're on different pages, you're kind of like going, you know, you're working, I'm home with the girls. There were like things like that. But we always like had fun mixed in with that. It wasn't like a lot of major drama, I feel. But I think for me personally, like, you know, after parenting for 19 years, I'm kind of probably over the last 2 years really tapping into who am I and what am I about, because you get in that mom mode. And I think there were times where I was so into mom mode, I probably wasn't into the relationship mode as much. And that's when things would get frustrating. Like, we were on different pages. I'm like, I'm trying to be a mom and do this stuff. And you're like at work and you're commuting into New York City and come back and I'm exhausted and you're exhausted. But we always did a good job of like, okay, we're in a rut and we got to get out of this because we both want the same thing.
So your parents stayed married. My parents were divorced. And I think I didn't have a master plan, but I thought I wanted to get married and I wanted to make sure that our marriage worked. And I do think I am a pretty good communicator. So I think when you go into a marriage wanting it to work, and I think I already weeded out the people that would not be compatible with. The number one thing I think that makes it work is that neither of us dig. Both of us want to have a good marriage, and I think that's key. And the other is we don't dig our heels in and we don't hold grudges. We have to get, if there is something that we're on the same team, we have the same goals in mind. And my only issue has been with you is you're not the best sometimes at putting your, like we said earlier, like putting yourself first and giving me a roadmap to say, hey, this is what I want. And I think over the last couple of years, you've gotten better at that. But I do think there are family, like we would see couples that would make us uncomfortable to be around because all they would be doing was arguing. And the other thing that I think that we've never done is disrespected each other in general, but more importantly, not as more importantly, but as important, we would never disrespect each other in front of anyone else. And I see that all the time. Wives just, he's this or he's that.
Know.
And like, I'll see you looking at them. I'm like, oh man, I hope she really does feel that positively about me because like you'd never do that.
Honestly, even if I felt that way, like, listen, if I had one of those days where I was like frustrated and annoyed by, we just weren't on the same page or whatever. And I'm hanging out with my girlfriends, I would never bash you, ever. Because it's a moment. It's not who you are. It's and it's half me. You know, it's like it's a two-way street. So the reason I'm frustrated has a lot more to do with like, oh, Mark's an asshole. Like, it's not. And I don't feel that way because I think we're just really, really good for each other. As far as I know, I don't think you bash me either.
Well, I think what's interesting and sometimes...
But if anyone's ever heard him bash me, please text me.
No, I think what makes it tough for me sometimes is like I wish... And I want to try to do a better job at this. Like telling you how I feel about you like you weren't there. Because when I'm talking about you to someone else and people are like, oh my God, your wife's so cool. I'm like, oh, let me tell you how great she is, or no, it's not like, but you don't wake up in the morning and just sit there and tell.
No, tell me. People all the time say, your husband says the nicest things about you. He is always like, he's your biggest cheerleader. And I'm like, really? And I don't even know this. Like, tell me. So, okay, you were saying you wish I did a better job of letting you know, blah, blah, blah. I think over the last 2 years, that's kind of like I'm learning. And so now I can tell you, and I'm telling you now, tell me all those nice things.
Yeah, it's just sometimes it's like there's issues happening or the dogs are barking or we have four dogs
Excuse me, sir. Those sound like excuses.
Yes, they are.
And then, but it goes both ways. Like you tell me as well, like how I can bring more to the relationship that is better for you.
I just think we're smart about it. And we just say, all right, look, this marriage isn't going anywhere. So a week from now, we're going to be fine. Why can't we be fine an hour from now? Because why
drag it on?
Yeah. And I see couples that.
Because we want to do fun things. So yeah, we're like, okay, like, can we be done with this?
Like, I don't need the silent treatment. I'm sorry. And
you really struggle. I don't know if it's, you don't want to admit you're wrong, which, I mean, come on, let's be honest. There's times that you should say sorry. And what you do is you make a joke out of it, and that just annoys me
more. Yeah, so I do. And I've learned sometimes recently to just take your medicine. And even if it's not, even deep down inside, you know, it's probably maybe only 10% your fault, maybe 8 single digits. Like, just say you're sorry and let's not drag this on.
But I don't want an I'm sorry so we can just like, put a Band-Aid on it.
No,
like, if I'm like upset, it's because something is bothering me and we got to like, I want you to know why I'm upset. And so I have to do a better job of telling you.
No, I know why you're upset. I don't agree with it. But to save us from a days of arguing, I just say I'm sorry. And then it's all better.
Hold on. It doesn't matter what you think. If I'm upset, that's valid.
It just matters that my sorry is convincing enough to move on.
I'm done with this date. Wait, we have so much to talk about. But whatever. All that being said, like, I'm happy and I love you and it works. So I guess we're doing something right.
Sounds convincing. So that was good. Anyway, so I just wanted.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just want to tell you I'm sorry if this didn't work out really as we planned. And then my sincerest apologies.
This wasn't the best date we've been on. You know what? I do feel that these podcast sessions with you are good for us to talk through things. We have a lot more to talk about off mic. No, but it's good because I think we all need to have some self-realization.
Yeah, and people can't see our faces. Like, we were smiling through this whole thing.
But thanks for listening. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Thanks, Heidi. Don't forget to follow us on my socials at Mark D'Amelio.
Follow me at Heidi D'Amelio. Don't forget to subscribe and share.
And if you think we did a good job, especially because I'm going to be in trouble after this, give us 5 stars. That'd be very nice. And that's it, man. Thanks a lot. This was awesome. Can't wait to talk to you again soon, Heidi.
Yeah, same.
So sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Apologies.
Love you, Mark.
Apologies accepted.
This was fun. See you next time.
Bye.